Welcome this morning as we look at a rather broad sweep today of those stories we have been looking at. And you'll see that in terms of our reading for today, there is one reading, but it covers quite a broad part of the 7th and 8th chapters of Mark's Gospel. And what we're going to be looking at is what falls in between the story of the feeding of the 5,000 and the story of the feeding of the 4,000. Because everything in between there is connected. We have this idea there of receiving goodness into ourselves. That's one of the themes in there. And we're going to look today at how that applies to our own lives and how the Lord works in different areas of our life, from more internal areas to more external areas, in order to fulfill his purposes with us. And of course, we remember that his purpose is to shift our center of being from self to a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. Let us pray. Our reading today from the Word is from the Gospel of Mark, and we're reading chapter 7, verse 24, through to chapter 8, verse 10. I remember the Lord had just had a bit of a dialogue with the scribes and Pharisees, and that has just been completed, and then we have our reading. From there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it, but he could not be hidden. For the woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syro-Phoenician by birth, and she kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. But Jesus said to her, "Let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she answered and said to him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs." Then he said to her, "For this saying, go your way, the demon has gone out of your daughter." And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out and her daughter lying on the bed. Again, departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, he came through the midst of the region of Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. And they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in his speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him. And he took him aside from the multitude, and put his fingers in his ears, and he spat and touched his tongue. Then, looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened." Immediately his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. Then he commanded them that they should tell no one, but the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." In those days the multitude, being very great, and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, "I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar." Then his disciples answered him, "How can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness?" And he asked them, "How many loaves do you have?" And they said, "Seven." So he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and gave thanks, broke them, and gave them to his disciples to set before them, and they set them before the multitude. they also had a few small fish. And having blessed them, he said to set them also before them. So they ate and were filled, and they took up 7 large baskets of leftover fragments. Now those who had eaten were about 4,000, and he sent them away. Immediately he got into the boat with his disciples and came to the region of Dalmanutha. And the readings from the Heavenly Doctrines this morning is from the work Divine Providence, paragraph 278. The heading of that paragraph is, Evils cannot be removed unless they appear. This does not mean that man is to do evils in order that they may appear, but that he is to examine himself, not his actions only, but also his thoughts, and what he would do if he were not afraid of the laws and disgrace, especially what evils he holds in his spirit to be allowable and does not regard as sins. For these he still commits. In order that man may examine himself, an understanding has been given him, then this separate from the will, that he may know, understand, acknowledge what is good and what is evil, and also that he may see the quality of his will, or what it is he loves and desires. In order that he may see this, his understanding has been furnished with higher and lower thought, or interior and exterior thought, to enable him to see from higher or interior thought what his will is doing in the lower or exterior thought. This he sees as a man sees his face in a mirror. And then he sees it and knows what sin is. He is able, if he implores the help of the Lord, not to will it, but to shun it, and afterwards to act against it. If not wholeheartedly, still he can exercise constraint upon it by combat, and at length turn away from it and hate it. Now, and not before, he first perceives and also feels that evil is evil, and that good is good. This then is what is involved in examining oneself, seeing one's evils and recognizing them, confessing them, and afterwards desisting from them. The title for our sermon today is Engaging Lower Things. And as I mentioned, the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000 forms somewhat of a sandwich with a number of stories that occur in between. And these stories all relate to a progression from our understanding of what spiritual things are about through to a new understanding or new enlightenment as to what the spiritual life is about. And the phases that fall in between, we see the Lord's contention with the scribes and the Pharisees. We then see him with this woman who has a daughter who has an unclean spirit. We then see him move to a man who is deaf and has a speech impediment. And finally, we have the feeding of the 4,000. Now, there are general aspects to this that we can compare and contrast, which shows us that all these things are, in fact, connected. And we only have to look, first of all, at the disciples. And if you recall, when they were presented with the need at the feeding of the 5,000, their response was, send them away. But here we see a real shift in attitude that has occurred, because now they don't say, send them away, Lord. What they say is, how can such a need be satisfied? So we see that there is a shift in their perceptions. And that shift is a shift we all need to make. A shift from Let somebody else take care of it. I don't want my life messed up. To how can such a need be met? So the attitude is very different. One is looking to meet the need. The other is just wanting to separate it away from them and not have it impinge on them. So it's a lovely comparison that can be drawn there. But it's not only there, it's also in the numbers used. We've spoken a lot about numbers and their meaning. And what you'll notice with the feeding of the 5,000, that the number 5 is predominant there. They're broken into 50s and hundreds, as you recall. And of course, there is 5,000. And we spoke about the number 5 being the number of potential. A little that can become much. And how great is that shift in attitude reflected in that question that the disciples now ask of the Lord. With the feeding of the 4,000, we have a different set of numbers there. The numbers are the number 4, obviously, with 4,000, and we have spoken about that number before. The number 4 being a number associated with the marriage of what is good and true. And what does that tell us? Well, that tells us that the little that could become much has now become much and has actually become a marriage. There's been a connecting within the minds of the disciples. And also, if we follow this progression, there is a connection within our own minds as truth is now beginning to work to see the application, to see the use that it can affect. We also see the numbers 3 and 7 mentioned here. And these numbers are always associated with completeness. But not only are they associated with what is complete or what is whole, they also carry significance in that they are associated with what is holy, what is sacred. And perhaps in the context of what we're going to be looking at, what is pure and how purity in our life is affected. Now there are two themes that connect all these stories together. Well, two that we're going to be looking at. There are others. But there is the theme of eating, of taking into oneself goodness and how that can be done. And on the other side, there is this theme of purification. What the Pharisees saw as the means of purification, in contrast to how the Lord sees purification taking place in our lives. So we have this split occurring in the stories. And the way of separation we can call the traditions of men, which is the way of the Pharisee. Now the Pharisee, the word Pharisee means separate, apart from. And they represent a negative tendency in us all to separate ourselves from the Lord, to separate ourselves from the workings of love in our life. Because when we are operating out of self as a center, when that aspect, when that influx begins to come into us and disturb our minds, it can be too much for us. So what we do is we create the means by which we can keep it at bay and stay as we are. This is the way of the Pharisee. It's the way of the Pharisee in each one of us. And we do well to learn how it is with us in regard to the Pharisee. Because when we can recognize these things operating in our lives, then we can do something about them. But if we do not recognize them, we are their slave. They put it on us. The Pharisees put it on not only themselves, but on the people. They constructed impossible practices which the people could not keep, and then forced the people into that form of religion. It's interesting, in the work Divine Providence, which our reading came from today, it also talks about when religion is compelled, it shuts in the evils. And they destroy. They destroy the person. True religion, true spirituality, draws evils out into the open. We must engage them. And we'll have a look in a moment about how that is to be done. So we have this idea of the way of the Pharisee of splitting our world up. So the thing you'll notice about the Pharisees, it is us and them. The sacred, or those elements that relate to religious domain of life, have been separated from the domain of the secular or the profane. We have this split occurring. And this split occurs because then it makes it easier for us in one sense, in that we know what we have to reject and we know what makes us holy. Unfortunately for the Pharisees and for those who operate out of that spirit, it's only in externals. We split the world up into what is sacred and what is profane in order to try and control our world and get a sense of, well, if I do this, if I adhere to these rules and regulations, if I go to church and do these external things, then my world is safe. I am clean. I am kept. The Lord had a very different view when dealing with the Pharisees. And just have another reading here from the Divine Providence. And why it is the Lord can't allow that form of split to be maintained within a person if they're going to grow spiritually. Let's have a listen to this. It's from paragraph 282. It would have been possible for the Lord to heal the understanding in every man and so cause him to think not evilly but good. And this by means of fears, of various kinds, by miracles, by conversations with the dead, and by visions and dreams. But to heal the understanding alone is to heal man outwardly only. For the understanding with its thought is the external of man's life, while the will with its affection is the internal of his life. Therefore, the healing of the understanding alone would be like a palliative healing, by which the interior malignity, shut in and prevented from coming out, would destroy first the near and then the remote parts till the whole would become mortified. It is the will itself that must be healed, not by means of an influx into it of the understanding, for that is not possible, but by means of instruction and exhortation of the understanding. If the understanding alone were healed, man would become like a dead body, embalmed, or covered over with fragrant spices and roses, which would soon draw from the body such a foul odor that they could not be brought near anyone's nostrils. So would it be with heavenly truths in the understanding if the evil love of the will were denied outlet. It wasn't without reason that Jesus, when he confronted the Pharisees at another time, called them whitewashed tombs. It's because they were unwilling to engage in what was in their own hearts, and they projected what was within them outside of themselves, shutting off the world, trying to keep a safe environment within the context of their temple worship, and not allowing the world to encroach in. We too can do that mentally. We can be in states of denial and avoidance as to things that are in our lives that need to be dealt with, and we shut them out and make like they don't exist. Unselfish attitudes, uncharitable views of others, these sorts of things which are trying to come to the surface all the time. And they are coming to the surface so they can be dealt with. And it is the Lord who allows them to come to the surface so that we will deal with them. You see, in contrast to the scribes and Pharisees, we have the Lord's way, which is engagement. The Lord did not run from temptation. He engaged it as it came, because he understood the principles. And neither should we run. When things come up in us, when we enter situations which stir up negative feelings, bad thoughts, these things, we need to face them. Look at them, call them for what they are. The worst thing we can do is suppress them, because they just keep coming up. Until they are dealt with, they will keep coming up, because they are within us. The engagement, if you look at the Lord's example, is from the Word. When he was tempted in the wilderness, he quoted from the Word. Same with us. We need to draw those principles we have learnt from the heavenly doctrines related to the Word, and use those as the means of dealing with those things that come up in our life, so that we can become a more loving and understanding people. This is the way, if you like, of the commandment of God, or the commandments of God. Those commandments are given so we can reflect on what is in our will. That is what the reading this morning said. You remember that with Jesus' interaction with the scribes and the Pharisees, he brought up a commandment. He brought up the commandment about honoring your father and mother. Do you remember? The Pharisees, what they had done was they had said, due to their traditions, that I've given myself to the things of God. Therefore, that is enough. And I'm absolved of my responsibility to my father and mother. It is this sacrifice that I've made to God has basically left me in a position where I no longer have to honour that commandment. They would never put it in those words, but that's effectively what had come about. This is what happens too when we separate things into our neat little compartments. What we do on Sunday and how we live during the week. You see, we have an obligation to bring the spiritual life into the secular or profane areas that we engage in on a daily basis. We have a responsibility to do that. And if we don't do that, then what's the point in learning about the Lord, about his word, about these spiritual truths, about how good operates? What's the point of it all if it isn't to bring it to where the needs are? So spiritually, to honour something is to hold it in its proper place. And to honour our father and mother, spiritually speaking, is to honor love and wisdom in our life. It is to honor goodness and to honor what truth teaches concerning that goodness and how it is to be distributed, employed, how it is to be used. That is what it is to honor the father and mother from a spiritual perspective. And this is something the Pharisees did not understand. They didn't understand it. And so the whole is defiled. They lacked understanding because they didn't want to know. And then you'll recall that Jesus went into a story about it's not what goes into a person that defiles them, but what comes out of them. The Pharisees, they would have understood the Lord just to be talking about food, because that was what the debate was at the time, natural food. But the Lord is talking about spiritual things. He's responding, yes, responding to their question, but he's coming from a totally different place. So what is it that is inside us, and what is it that is outside us? Where are these domains? Well, in that reading from Divine Providence, it talked about the understanding being that which is exterior and the will being that which is interior. So, the things that flow into the understanding, the things that we can recognize, are coming into the exterior man. They are outside of us if we are indeed engaged in the work of repentance. If you can see something flowing in, outside, flowing into your mind, and you can recognize its quality, then it isn't in you. Because there is something higher in you that the Lord has built up in you, whereby you can see that thing. Where we get into real trouble is where we see it as ourselves, where we don't draw that separation. If we are on the spiritual path and we fall into a position where we can't differentiate between what is lower and higher, we've been sucked down into it. And that is when temptation occurs. And then we find ourselves in a battle. But it's not us. The thing there is not us. It is not in us. Because we can recognize it, because we use the truths from the Word to do that. And when it is not, when it is recognized as evils or falsity, it can be cast out. Jesus says it's cast into the draught, and all things remain pure. So it doesn't matter what kind of thoughts enter your mind, or what kind of feelings you begin to feel. What matters is what you do in response to those. That is why truth is given. The understanding is there to purify the will. Because from the understanding we can recognize what is evil and false and what is good and true. And making that judgment, we can separate out those things that hinder our growth and development, spiritually speaking, and take in the things that build us up, the goodness that the Lord supplies. You see, it's a mistake to think that other people and situations you come into contact with cause those feelings, those negative feelings and thoughts in you. The appearances that I hit Joe Bloggs and he says something offensive to me, therefore he's caused my offense. No. The offense lies within you. There are things in you that are seeking the means by which they can become expressed. So when you come into contact with a situation or a person that seems to stir you up, know this, that the thing stirred up is already in you. All it is found is the means by which it can be made known. Become grounded, much like electricity, going through the wire. Until you put the light bulb in, you don't know it's there. The same with us. Spiritual influxes are happening all the time. And things that we come into contact with in the exterior world ground them and make themselves visible in our thinking and our feeling. And if it's uncharitable, it's from the hells. That's how they gain their place in our minds. But if we recognize it, it is not in us. It's in our exterior. And it may even be that we battle with it. And it may even seem that we lose. But if we have battled, the Lord has been there, and you have not lost. Wars are won over a course of many battles, and included in those are defeats and victories. But overall, it's a victory. And the Lord, if He has you, He will not let you go, despite what the appearances are without. And interesting, from Divine Providence 251, says this regarding why these things must occur. Evils cannot be repressed by any act of providence. For if they were, they would remain shut in, and like a disease such as cancer or gangrene, they would spread and consume everything vital in man. So these things will rise up within us. They will be seen in our exterior mind. They are not in us. We need not fear them. We just need to recognize them and make the effort, calling on the Lord to battle with them. And the battles are hard, yes. But that is what we are called to do. But it's the Lord who undertakes. It's only the Lord that can defeat these things in us, although it seems to be from us. The Lord says we must engage in that battle. You don't go looking for things, but you must engage. Disengagement becomes noticeable even at a social level in society. The church has slowly, from its inception, the time of the apostles, become more and more closed in and separated from the world outside, and has lost relevance over time. This is the same thing being played out at a social level, the separating out of what is holy, what is not holy, into our neat little boxes. But at that level, the Lord says we must engage. You see, creating a neat, safe little world doesn't deal with what's inside. But as we get out there and we enter situations which grounds what's inside us, then we can see it and deal with it. And that is how purification takes place. Not by shutting out what disturbs us, but by turning and with the Lord's strength, facing what comes up. And this is the example the Lord gave with this woman when He headed up to Tyre and Sidon. Now Tyre and Sidon was to the north, out onto the coast. And it was outside of Israel, outside Israel's borders. This was the land of the Gentiles. And culturally, for Jesus to go up there and enter into this region, like from the perspective of the scribes and the Pharisees, that was just, it would have been just incomprehensible that He would mix with Gentile dogs. Incomprehensible to them. But what a powerful illustration of having to engage in the lower things of life, and to bring goodness and truth into those areas of our life. That is how purification takes place. Not by shutting it out and hoping it just go away. Through engagement. Engagement, engagement, engagement. That's what it takes. That's what it takes for a church. That's what it takes for us as individuals. That's what it takes for us as individuals exteriorly and internally. These principles apply at every level. You see, with that region being outside of Israel, what we have there is a splitting up of regions, and that represents different levels within our own being. The levels, well, Galilee is inside Israel, or is inside the domain of our spiritual thinking. Because that is where the principles represented by the disciples are gathered together and built up and taught. So that is our religious or spiritual thinking. That's what Israel represents. And it speaks of a level of the mind. But when we get out to Tyre and Sidon, what we have there is what is outside. What is outside. And that speaks of that sense realm of our minds. So the lower things. And what the Lord shows is that when love and wisdom is applied even into that area, we can't be contaminated. We won't be contaminated as long as we have those principles governing from a higher place within us. This woman with the daughter who was possessed of an unclean spirit speaks of lower affections. A daughter is something that is tied to the heart. It's an affection. And what this story tells us is that there's uncleanness in those affections. But the woman coming to Jesus tells us there is a desire to see things put right. And then you have this dialogue between this woman and Jesus. And it seems like the Lord is very harsh initially. You know, should be given to children before it's given to the dogs. It seems like, how can that come from the Lord? Here's a woman in deep need. Of course, we have to lift ourselves out of the cultural context and see it from a spiritual perspective. The Lord refuses no one. He welcomes all. And this reticence at this lower level reflects our own attitude and discomfort with spiritual things at this level of life. A discomfort, perhaps in a more external way, in our workplaces or clubs or, you know, wherever we actually engage with other people, and perhaps they don't really know that we have a degree of spirituality in our lives. There's an element of discomfort about that being known at that level of life. We see that reflected in this attitude. But what happens through this dialogue is that, you see, at that lower level of life, it likes to have things on its own terms. And what this dialogue between the woman and Jesus does is it actually causes the woman to respond out of her need. And in that response, there is seen an order. The proper order. There is a realization that the things that are spiritual are to be used for spiritual ends. Our lower nature would want to use it for selfish ends. But the Lord, in seeming to hold off, brings about a realization. One, that we need to engage. Two, it is the Lord who does it. And three, there is an order. The higher things must be nurtured first. They must receive goodness, that is the bread, and be built up. And then what seems to be just a crumb or a few crumbs is enough to affect a dynamic change in that woman's life. The affection at that lower level is healed. And just to finalize this, what you then see, once that affection is healed, is the Lord returns back into Galilee and he deals with this man who is deaf and has a speech impediment. It's a man now, so it is the understanding. The healing of that affection now is bringing about a new understanding, a healed understanding. The man is deaf. He struggles to obey because he can't hear. But the Lord unstops his ear using lower things, his own spit, which speaks of the literal sense of the word. That is able to bring about an understanding that can obey. And of course, through obedience comes testimony, which is represented by the healing of the impediment in that man's speech. So we see from the feeding of the 5,000 through to the feeding of the 4,000, we have a wonderful example of the Lord and how he works at various levels to bring about that shift in attitude that we should all long for. Amen.